The most important idea that we have about God is that God is the source, so to speak. That is to say, what leads us to God is the environment that we're in. We find ourselves in a universe, in a world, which is governed by laws of nature, which where any aspect of it that you study, you see it's not haphazard, it's not random, but that there's a, I guess what we would call an infinite wisdom, laws of nature. And we ourselves have within us a certain element which gives us the capacity to tap into those laws. That is to say, if we utilize our mind, if we study, it's not an illusion. We can understand this universe up to a certain extent, and in that sense, the fact that scientists are always involved in studying, and every time they discover something, then there's a question, they continue, it's ironic, but even though most scientists, I guess, or many scientists will say they don't believe in a God, but in a sense they're contradicting themselves, because they have to believe. If they didn't believe, if a person maintained that the world is just random, complete accident, that doesn't...
And there's no study.
There's nothing to study. Why every time you study, you're assuming that there's got to be an explanation. But there's got to be an explanation assumes that there's a structure, and that there's design, and that there's wisdom, and that there's knowledge. For example, if you were to come upon a magnificent structure, a palace or a house, and you know that the architect, the one who designs, is the greatest architect. And not just in a general sense, but everything that he does, every particular aspect is done with thought and with wisdom. So then when you pause, you look at every, not just in general, what's the general sense, but then you notice little particulars, alcoves and other type of things, and you stop and you understand what was his thinking, what was the reason, why did he place this over here? And if somebody came along and said, well, that's, he just woke up in the morning, that's what he felt, you know, or whatever. You'd say, no, you don't know this person. Everything he does is a result of careful thought. So in a sense, there's belief. It's not faith, religious faith, it's an understanding that this is the way this came about. On the other hand, if you happened upon a certain structure in the wilderness, that had been brought about or in the mountains, something, you know, over time sometimes the forces of nature, storms and so forth can produce something that has the elements of a structure. You could find shelter in it, but then you realize that it really came about as a result of accidents. There was no particular design, so you're not going to ask those questions. So our concept of God, first and foremost, is that the universe that we find ourselves in cannot be a result of chance. Person maintains that it's a result of chance and everything's an accident, so then you can't speak about God. There's nothing to speak about. But then, of course, you have to follow the consequences throughout your whole life. I mean, and then bear in mind that there is no meaning. If there's no meaning, if the universe itself does not reflect meaning, then there's not going to be any meaning, you know, if it's an accident, which means that it comes about not because of any point or any purpose. So then within the little framework that you seek to create, everybody's searching for meaning, bear in mind, you're not going to find it in your little corner because it can't be. It doesn't exist. There's no source for it. So we maintain the opposite. We maintain that the more you study, the more you see that it's not an accident. It's an intricate system, and the more science discovers, the more you look at the transformation of reality. We know that how people lived 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, primitive conditions. And even then they were able to maintain a civilization and to communicate and to be involved in tremendous projects. And they thought they were advanced. And you take a look at today's world, the transformation, the ability to communicate from one end of the world to the other, to put a man on the moon, and to rebuild the entire body, and all this is the result of knowledge. So you see two things, that there's knowledge, that this is a universe which manifests tremendous knowledge, infinite knowledge, because any scientist will tell you, you're just scratching the surface. And what's even more amazing is that we have something that no other being has. We are possessed of a certain faculty which enables us to tap into source of knowledge and to utilize it within reason, within limits, and to make tremendous transformations. No other being has that. No animal has that. Animals are stay the same. I mean, they have a very limited intelligence, that which is necessary to preserve their existence, but it's very limited. There's no progress. There's no tapping into the abstract concepts which govern the universe. So then the question is, could this have, what's the cause? It didn't create itself. We don't assume that something created itself. So what's the source? And that basically is the foundation for our belief in a being of infinite wisdom. A being who's outside of the framework of the universe. So we're talking about two different realms. The realm of the created, that is to say that everything that exists, is the created. It's the realm of the created. It's a humbling thought, as I mentioned, because people don't look at themselves as being created. If a person realizes that you're not responsible for your own existence, then that would eliminate a tremendous haughtiness. I mean, as I mentioned, people act as though this is mine, it's my life, it's my body, I can do whatever I want. The truth is, it's not yours because you didn't bring it into existence. So it's some other force outside of yourself. But that's not true just of me or you, the particular, it's true of everything that exists. Everything that we encounter in the realm of the universe that's created, it's not responsible for its own existence because it reflects design and wisdom, and there must be a source for all this. So thus, our idea of God is the creator. We use different terms. And it's very important in this area to know how much we can know and how much we can't know. And the first thing we know about God is that God is the source. God is the creator, who thus, God is the true existence. God has real existence. And God exists, and God is a being of infinite wisdom, and he, as a result of his will and his power, so to speak, his ability, so to speak, because now you realize you're talking about a being who you don't know. Because when I speak about power, I'm talking about physical power. When I talk about knowledge or intelligence, I'm talking about, this is a reflection. What we have is a reflection. That's why we say that man, and by man I mean human, was created in the image of God. It's a reflection. But we don't mean to compare our knowledge with God's knowledge. We don't resemble God in any way, shape, or form. We believe that God has endowed us with a capability, with that element within us which enables us to partake of the world of knowledge, which is above the instinctual. And that's what we strive for. So first and foremost, our concept is that this universe that we find ourselves in has to have a source. And that source is the Creator, who brought it into existence and sustains it. It's the will of the Creator which sustains it, because in and of itself it doesn't partake of existence. And if the will of the Creator did not relate to it, it would cease to exist. We cannot form any type of an imaginary picture of God. That's
can't visualize it.
Yeah, that's very, very dangerous, and that's where we differ from other religions.
Right. Okay.
Because all of these visions, all of these pictures, originate in our own imagination. That's very dangerous. We don't want to distort the idea of God and to project. We have the capacity to project. We project all the time. Now, religious people have a certain need for a certain type of a comfort, and they want to have a certain kind of relationship with the higher being because they want to achieve a certain type of security and protection. That is all right, but you can't allow that emotion to determine the actualities. So that God is essentially unknowable. Unknowable, except we know the things that God decided to reveal to us about how he relates to us. Let's put it this way. God, whatever we know about God, other than the basic, this basic idea is not something you necessarily need religion for. That this universe owes its existence to a being outside of it. Now, once you say outside of it, you're already saying unknowable. Because we only know that which we can deal with in this universe. However, Judaism maintains that this supreme being, that God, created us and the world for a purpose. That's very, very important. Very important idea. Not just for the sake of existence. Just to exist and do whatever you please kind of a thing, but there is a specific purpose that he created us for. That is not that difficult to discover what the purpose of something is. It's not that difficult to discover. Except in the case of man. For example, when you're talking about an animal, which has a much simpler constitution, makeup, so its purpose, once you define what its nature is, what its essence is, so that's its purpose. Its purpose is to fulfill its nature, to be in line with its nature, so to speak. Man, however, is more complex. Because man, by instinct, is not necessarily in line with his nature. Man needs direction, man needs guidance, because man is, first of all, more complicated. Man has an instinctual makeup, we have instincts, we have emotions, so in a certain sense we're like animals, we're animalistic. On the other hand, we have this other element, which I just spoke about, which no other being possesses. The capacity for knowledge, for thought, and the capacity to act contrary to instinct. No animal possesses that. No animal possesses the ability to act contrary to instinct. Of course, you can train a dog up to a point, but the dog may not go after the biscuit because it's afraid of the master. But that's an instinctual kind of thing. So man is the only being that is complex. And in order to fulfill your life, the concept of fulfillment is to achieve your purpose. So the question is, what is the purpose that we were created for? That is something which we maintain God reveals to us in the Torah, or the general guidelines towards the purpose. The Torah is the book of divine revelation. So that Judaism is founded on the idea that the supreme being, the creator, who is responsible for the physical universe and everything that's in it, and set it up in a certain way, so that every being gets what it needs and so forth, the laws of nature, and it sustains itself, is also involved, is also connected, so to speak, to the progress of mankind. I'm just going to use general descriptive terms. Because when we talk about God, of course, you have to bear in mind that we're just using words. We can't say that God cares. Does God care about us? Well, when you say care implies a certain feeling, a certain sensitivity. And we can't ascribe that to God because we're not talking about a being that partakes of these kinds of emotions. So, but in the sense that it is it's significant to God that we should achieve a certain objective. And that is God involved in helping us, so to speak? Does God reveal this to us? That we maintain is true, that God revealed the system that he wants us to live by in the Torah. Our source of knowledge about God, there's just so much that one can figure out with the use of your own reason. So the basic idea that the universe displays a being of infinite wisdom, and the universe is not responsible for its own existence, hence there has to be creation, and there's this being outside the universe who created it. A certain amount, you know, we can deduce, the more we study, the more we understand the universe, though when you're learning about the universe, you're learning about God. But you're learning about the ways of God, so to speak. The ways that God sustains all of his creatures. And he sets up a system in which every being has what it needs. It's and so on and so forth. But we also believe that another source for our knowledge about God is revelation. Because there's just so much that you could figure out by use of reason alone. When it comes to questions about human existence and how we're to govern our lives and how we're to govern society and what we should strive for and how we can live a meaningful life, that's the arena in which God did not leave us to our own devices. Left to our own devices, each person has his own idea of how to live his life. So we're basing ourselves on revelation, that God reveals his will, specific will, as to human existence, how we should live our lives, what's good and what's bad, permitted and prohibited, and so on and so forth. Because the question really is pertaining to the Jewish religion. And you can't speak about the Jewish religion without the idea of revelation. So we do believe in the phenomenon of revelation, and then God now has given us a book called the Torah, and the more we study it, the more we live by it. So we're saying that there's another dimension, and that is to live a life to the greatest extent possible, which is in compliance with God's will. So it's not just that you're living a nice life or a good life, but there's a higher dimension over here. And that is that our purpose is to, so to speak, get closer and closer to God, to be more God-like, to fashion our own souls in accordance with the ways of God that God has revealed to us. Questions being raised as to whether everybody is basically worshiping the same God. I maintain that there's only one God in reality. That's for sure. Can't be that there's more than one God, because by definition God is the source. However, people can misapprehend. People can make a mistake in terms of who that source is or what their concept of that source is. That can happen in many cases where it's not clear who the leader is, a situation like that. So we all know that there's got to be a leader that put it all together, but people can differ as to who or what the qualities of that leader would be. So the concept that one has is not the same. Now you see, there are primitive people that worship animals or spirits. Perhaps these animals are supposed to reflect different spirits. Clearly the case of the Christians, where their idea of God is that God has human characteristics, Jesus. And that's something that we abhor. We regard that as being idolatry. That's very, very significant, because we're saying that can't be God. That's something you're inventing in your own mind. You invent a concept, which most religions are based upon a certain emotion within people. People are born with a certain religious emotion. It's not by accident that all people are religious. It's religious by nature. Judaism says we should not just follow our natural religious instinct. Everything we do should be based upon wisdom, which is part of the soul, the divine soul, that God has implanted within us. And thus, if a person misidentifies, makes a mistake, misidentifies, projects a certain being onto the universe, and then they elevate it and make it into God, that's idol worship. And the same people have worshiped people. In a certain sense, the people deified Hitler. Hitler became more than human to many people, and they worshiped him, that he's the source, he's the ultimate power, so to speak. People can do that even if they don't necessarily believe that he created the world, which would be an absolute absurdity. But that doesn't stop people, and even religious figures. People ascribe, whenever you ascribe supernatural powers to a person or even to an object, that's idolatry. So therefore, you know that there are many movements. Was this Koresh in the case of Waco? There have been many, many charismatic leaders, people related to him as though he were a god, as though he were more than human. As soon as you say more than human, that's already idol worship. You're ascribing powers that belong only to the Creator. So, while there's only one true God, that's the whole idea of Judaism. The whole idea of Judaism is that you should search for the true God. That's Judaism, the essence is truth. the concept of truth to the greatest extent, and that we have the capacity, because therein lies our essence. That's what God created us for. That's why God gave us this tremendous tool, to apprehend Him in truth to the greatest extent possible. The more we apprehend of Him by understanding about His creation, about nature, and seeing the hand of God in nature, the more we become perfected. And that infuses all of our actions, even our actions in terms of compassion. We maintain that our compassion is unique. It's different than any other compassion. Because you could ask me a question, well, doesn't all religions say pretty much the same thing? Before I go on to this, I just want to relate to something that Jesse said, that it is extremely important to recognize that our concept of the Creator is very much intertwined with our concept of what the Creator demands of us. For example, take the case of Christianity. Their concept is not the true Creator, it's this being called the Jesus, which has human characteristics. Now, their idea of the Creator is that the Creator has this tremendous love for them, infinite love for them, and forgiveness. And therefore, pretty much, whatever you do doesn't really matter, because you really can't do any good. They do not look at God as a being who has endowed them with choice and with the ability to work on their emotions. And what God demands of us, requires of us, is that we transform our nature through the utilization of our intelligence and our free will. That's not the case at all. Rather, according to them, God is there to basically forgive. As long as you commit the worst atrocities. As long as you believe that Jesus died for your sins, so that's your ticket to heaven. If you don't believe that, then you're not a Christian. So it does not matter how you live your life. It doesn't matter how good a person you are. That is to say that according to them, God is not interested in whether you're good or not good in the way that we understand it. All that matters is basically that you believe that He died for your sins and whatever sacraments you have to get, the water, whatever the case may be, and that's it. Ticket to heaven. That cannot be compared in any way, shape, or form with what Judaism believes. I'm just showing you one example. And it's crucial. Your concept of the Creator is also going to have a profound impact upon your concept of human life. So what does this Creator want from you? What am I supposed to do? What's the purpose of life? So that is very, very important. Judaism has a very unique idea as to our idea of the Creator, and just as significant, because our idea is that, okay, so you know the Creator, but the purpose of life is to live in conformity with the will of the Creator. So if you have a different idea of the Creator, or you have a different idea of God, so then your whole idea of what you're supposed to do in this world is going to change automatically. The question thus arises, what's the most important thing that one can do, according to Judaism, to live a life which is not aimless, and which has meaning and significance, not just in your own sense of things, but which is true, which is in conformity to the will of the Creator. What's the most important thing that you can do? The most important thing one has to do is to study. There are no immediate, simplistic type of answers. It's a search. Judaism is essentially a lifelong search for the truth. And we base ourselves on the fact that God's helping us. God helps us because He provides us with what we need to assist us. The revelation, the teachers, those who are proficient in the study of Torah. The most important thing that a person can do, and this is ongoing, to be involved in obtaining knowledge to the greatest extent possible. Not superficial, not to be content. Not to be content in this area. Of course, when I say knowledge, it's not just becoming an intellectual. And the problem is when you speak about knowledge, it conjures up the concept that the society has, that somebody has tremendous amount of information, has a PhD. And we're not talking about that so much. We're talking about understanding, a knowledge which is really rooted in understanding. And the objective of that knowledge should not just be for the sake of speculation per se, but to guide my actions by. To live in accordance with this knowledge and to set up a life which is based upon this knowledge. But knowledge should not be taken lightly in Judaism. That is the single most important acquisition. If you use it properly, of course, because nothing, a person can obtain knowledge and misuse it. That goes without saying. But that's what man was created for. If you want to know, what were we created for? What's our purpose? That's the area of the purpose. To understand, to learn. The more you learn, the more you understand, the closer you are getting to the Creator, to your knowledge. And of course, the side benefits are the better life you'll have. You'll avoid all of the pitfalls. Aristotle makes it clear that all the sufferings that exist in this world, all the evils and the atrocities that people perpetrate against other people is based on ignorance. So that eventually we do believe there will come a time in history, it's called the Messianic Era, when there will be world peace and all of mankind will live in harmony. And the reason will be because the world will be filled with the knowledge of God. So that as far removed as you can be from the idea that we're all worshipping the same God, to the contrary. To the extent that the world is involved in falsehood and false ideals and what they should be pursuing, to that extent you have all the suffering. People that have true knowledge not only fulfill themselves, but will only act with compassion towards others. There's no reason. They'd have no reason to be involved in anything which is destructive towards anybody else. Questions being raised about someone who takes the attitude that they are interested in learning and knowledge, and they would like to study Torah, but they don't really want to feel constrained to perform the commandments. There are commandments in Judaism. The do's and the don'ts. That's part of the system. What should our attitude be towards someone who takes such a position? Let's say somebody said that they're interested very much in studying nutrition. And we have this program of advanced studies in every aspect of nutrition. And they want to join and be immersed in the study of nutrition, but they don't want to change their eating habits. What would you say? What would your answer be? In a sense, there are two answers. In one sense, if a person is saying that they want to study Torah, but they have no intention, no desire to perform any of the commandments, which is to say, I'm going to study it, but I'm not going to live by it. By the way, that's relevant to this week's Sedra, where if you walk in my statutes, Rashi makes the point that everything begins with the study of Torah. It's a reference to the study of Torah. Teilechu. It says, Im b'chukosai teilechu, if you will walk in my statutes, v'yes mitzvosai tishmoru, and you will guard my mitzvos. So what's the difference? It seems to be repetitive. Now the guarding of the mitzvos, the commandments, is to keep the commandments. So if that's the case, what does it mean? If you will walk in my statutes. So Rashi says that's a reference to the study of Torah. It's very interesting that that's precisely what he's talking about. That is to say that the two ideas are that you study my Torah, but the objective of the study should be for the sake of performance. It's a different type of a study. That is that what we're talking about over here is when a person is studying the Torah, it's not just an idle speculation. Like you study an ancient society because you're curious. Or you study the Amish because it's curious. It's not because you really recognize that this represents some true way of life. It's just curious. So one can study the Torah that way as well. Rashi's pointing out that's not the appropriate way. The appropriate way is because you want to understand how to live your life. So you're studying for the sake of doing. In that sense, my answer, I was taking a hard line on this. Assuming that position. That if a person is saying, I have no interest whatsoever, and I do not believe that it's true. But I'm curious. In that sense, I would say no. There's no. It's just a waste of time. What's the point? What are you going to gain? To say that one is going to gain from the study of something which is intended to be a guide, it's like studying a guide through the wilderness. I'm going to study or read up all the books about how to go through the wilderness, but when that's it, then I'm not going to follow any of them. I'm going to hike the Grand Canyon without reference to any of the accepted wisdom. So then why are you reading the books? What good will it do you? What's the point? One would study these guides to help you. All right, you say, look, I can't conform 100%, but I'm going to try to use that wisdom because I'm climbing the Grand Canyon and I need the wisdom. But to say that I'm going to study all the wisdom on how to climb the Grand Canyon and then I'm just going to ignore it and just follow a little voice within me, I think everybody would say that's absurd. It's a waste of time. However, one can argue that in life it doesn't work that way. When I give the example of studying nutrition to someone who has no intention of establishing a nutritious diet. So of course it's a waste of time. What are you going to get from it? However, one can argue that no, that in the process of studying and realizing and understanding, then the person's attitude will change. That's the argument on the other side. Yeah, but you see, in making that argument, you're kind of agreeing with me. You're saying, given that the person's attitude would never, could never, ever change, then you'd agree with me. There's no point. However, in the reality of human existence, things don't work that way. And people's attitudes have a tendency of changing the more they gain knowledge. Knowledge changes people. Because when a person sees for themselves how this thing helped them, they're going to implement it. Because everybody wants that which is best for themselves. Because everyone's selfish by nature. That's something you can't change. There's no way you cannot be selfish. The only thing you can choose to be selfish in an intelligent way and thereby really help yourself, or you could choose to be intelligent in a non-intelligent way, to be selfish. Whatever a person is doing is selfish. It's motivated by selfishness. But that motivation is not enough. People live reckless lives. People take drugs. A person taking a drug is being selfish because at that moment he believes that that is what is good. He needs it. He thinks it's good for himself. But, in point of fact, he's killing himself. So I would tell this individual who says they want to study Torah, but they don't want to accept the system, the burdens, because they view it as a burden, the commandments, that they should study Torah. There's a benefit. There's definitely a benefit. Torah is so profound that it affects you on every level. And the knowledge, the insight, and then you're not the same person, by the way. Because Torah has the ability to change you. As you're studying Torah, you're not the same person anymore. So the person who's saying, I don't want to keep the commandments, is the person, that's who you are before you started to study. But as you study, you become a different person. You become transformed. And it affects your emotions, it affects your desires, and then you look at everything in a different light, and suddenly the commandments don't seem as burdensome anymore. Because Torah is something which transforms a person. That's the whole purpose of studying Torah. As I told you, you're not going to be the same person anymore. You're not going to be as instinctual. Because now you have a different vista. You have a new perspective. You have a new sense of what the good is all about. Your whole sense of reality will be changed as a result of studying Torah. That's why a person should study Torah. That's what the rabbis say, that a person should always study Torah, whether for the true sake, or whether not for its lishma, as we call it. Because as a result of studying Torah Shelo Lishma, even if you're studying for the wrong reason, you'll wind up studying for the right reason, because it's going to be a magnet. It's going to attract you. You're going to become attracted to the thing itself, for the sake of the thing itself. Let's say I have a group of kids or teenagers or something that need help. And so, you know, help with their problems, with their work, with adjustments and so forth. And you don't really want to do it. Because you have other things. Everybody's pretty much focused on their own lives. So, I say to you that you should do it, and I'll pay you for it. Now, let's say, okay, for that, fine, you're getting something. And that is to say that the inducement is not in the activity itself. You're doing the activity, but The motivation is not anything in the activity. You need something outside the activity. That's called work, by the way. A person, the only way to know if you have a good job is if, let's say you're doing the job, everybody pretty much is working for the money. Now, let's say you get back to won the lottery. If you won the lottery, would you stop what you're doing the very next day, or would you continue what you were doing anyways? Basically, the definition of love is when you do something even though you don't have to. The only way to know whether you're doing something out of love is if all the extraneous incentives were removed. That is, people don't realize the extent to which they do things in life because they have no choice. They have to do it. Many people are at a job because they really have no choice. Theoretically, there's a choice, but practically speaking, a person feels it's maybe too difficult and they can't afford it, they can't take a chance, they need the check coming in every week, and so forth. And even in other things, in terms of marriages, one, many people, it's a matter of necessity already. They don't have choice. However, if a person had choice, that is, they didn't have to stay at this job, because suddenly they obtained tremendous wealth, then that would be the test. Now, I think it's difficult for most people to even answer the question, because I think people answer the question in the framework of where they are now. So they're saying, yeah, I like my job and I would do it even if I didn't have to do it. But something happens when you no longer have to do it. A new emotion takes over.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Well, only a person who really knows himself or herself very, very well. And it's very hard to have that kind of self-knowledge when you're young. Generally speaking, that comes with a lot of introspection and a lot of years. You get to know yourself and how you perform and how you do things. And, for example, another sign of whether a person really loves what they're doing is even on vacation. Do you just want to get away from it? Now, I understand that even if you love something, you got to get away from it because of the pressures and a person needs a break and all of that. But if it's a lengthy vacation and you've gotten past that, is this the kind of thing you're naturally inclined to do when you don't have to do it? So I say that that's the true test, and it's very rare that a person really knows, because once you're hit with the money, then new fantasies begin to affect you. You're affected by all kinds of fantasies. And you're not the same person. It changes you. Now you look at yourself differently. Now suddenly you're important. You're a famous person, you're an important person, you're a wealthy person, and then that itself carries with it the need to obtain things. Now, temptation enters the picture. So you have to look at all the benefits that you have simply because you're not rich. You're not subject to all these different temptations. Once you're subject to these temptations, most of these people that come into sudden wealth, it doesn't enhance their life at all. They, generally speaking, tend to lose all the things that made life worthwhile. Their kindness, their patience, their virtue. Things that they were involved in, not because they were so wonderful, but because the situation of their life forced them to be humble. Once you lose the humbleness and now you have this crazy feeling of being so important in the scheme of things, you start to act in a crazy way. And you have no patience for people. You can't wait online like anybody else. Do they know who I am? All these emotions come to the fore. People like to laugh at these celebrities. When you read about how petty they are, or they get into a scrape, and they seem to be so arrogant, and they don't have respect, and people like to read about that. And when they read about it, it's with an air of superiority. I would never do that. Yeah, of course you would never do that, because you're not subjected to the same temptations. The truth is that these people were the same before they became famous. They were like you. I'm not justifying their behavior. The real test of perfection is when a person acts in a correct way, even though they don't have to, even though they can get away with it, even though they can mistreat people and can get away with it because you're important, so people aren't going to make a big deal out of it. It's wrong, however, to criticize others until you're in that place. That's a teaching of the rabbis. It's called Pirkei Avot, Chapters of the Fathers. It's a great book to get. One of the teachings is, do not judge your fellow until you have been in his place. Thus, I would advise anyone to study Torah, even if they are not prepared to make any changes at this point. Because I do believe if they study it properly, then everything is open to change. Their whole view of life will change. And the way they're acting now is based upon a certain view of life. And that view of life may be very, very limited. When your view increases and expands, so then you become open to living differently. But here, to living in accordance with your knowledge. The idea that a person should live in accordance with their knowledge is unique to Judaism. It's not something that I hear in the culture today.